The new year brings a new president to the White House, and the current one will make his exit. On Tuesdays this month, Morning Edition will be asking biographers and others about the transition out of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. NPR special correspondent Susan Stamberg begins this set of conversations with a historian who's written about the first president, as well as a few who followed him.
George Washington wasn't only our first president, he was also our first ex-president. And he set standards which either guided or limited those who came later. It's nice thinking back on George Washington to brush up on lessons learned in grade school and then admit it, forgotten. After he'd served two terms, George Washington left office in 1797. And Washington didn't leave Washington, he left Philadelphia, which was the capital then. And historian Richard Norton Smith says, as George Washington retired from office, he thought to make a little money on the move.
He tried to sell his furniture to the new president. And John Adams wasn't buying. In fact, much of what he did buy, he complained about later on, the condition that it was in.
97 crates were packed and shipped from Philadelphia to Mount Vernon. Richard Norton Smith, his biography is called Patriarch, George Washington and the New American Nation. Smith says at the farewell dinner, Washington proposed a toast to President-elect Adams. When he finished, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Washington watched Adams being sworn in and then departed. He's 64 years old, and by this time he's feeling old, tired, and really ready to leave.
And cranky. he was rather fed up with the press. They had abused him throughout his second term in office in particular. So he did not mind leaving. In fact, he had hoped to resign during his presidency. But he finally leaves after 8 years. He goes back to Mount Vernon, determined never again to get involved in public affairs, and is delighted to return to the firm, which is what he loves best in all the world. But he finds it impossible to remain simply a farmer. First of all, he is inundated with visitors from all over the world who want to meet the most famous man in the world.
Huh.
That is a real strain upon his limited resources. He said that his house resembled a well-resorted tavern, and that's no exaggeration.
George Washington would live another 2 years and 9 months. Historian Richard Norton Smith has served as director of the Dwight D. Eisenhower Center and has this story about our 34th president. Eisenhower came to office a military hero. He'd been supreme commander of the D-Day invasion. In 1953, he moved into the White House for two terms. And when he left, Richard Norton Smith says, Ike encountered some perils of the modern world.
On Inauguration Day, the Secret Service drove he and Mamie to Gettysburg. And in those days, the agents disappeared like Cinderella's pumpkin at midnight. There was no protection for the president once his term of office ended. And Ike went into the house, the farmhouse there, and he picked up the phone, and he heard this buzzing sound instead of an operator. And he was shouting at the phone and getting very angry and losing his storied temper. And someone finally explained to him that since the last time he'd actually picked up the phone and made a phone call himself, operators had been replaced by machines.
America's 30th president, Calvin Coolidge, was the quiet leader, a man of few words. A White House dinner guest once made a bet she could get Mr. Coolidge to say more than two words. When she told the president about the bet, he replied, "You lose." Calvin Coolidge was a New Englander. When he left the White House in 1929, "I do not choose to run for president," historian Richard Norton Smith says the conservative Republican went home to New England.
Coolidge went back to Northampton, Massachusetts, to the duplex, $26 a month, that he shared with another family on Massasoit Street. And he finally had to move out of the house because large numbers of tourists kept clogging this little quiet side street. Newsmen used to look inside his windows when he was shaving. And one day there was a tourist who approached and said to his friend, kind of in a low tone of voice, "Don't think much of this place." And Coolidge said to his friend on the porch, "Democrats."
Republican Calvin Coolidge out, Republican Herbert Clark Hoover in, 1929 to 1933, president number 31. Richard Norton Smith's book about Hoover is called An Uncommon Man, The Triumph of Herbert Hoover. But the circumstances surrounding Hoover's departure from the White House were hardly triumphant. 7 months after he took office, the stock market crashed, the Depression gripped America and Europe. Hoover became the scapegoat for the economic miseries and was badly defeated by Franklin Delano Roosevelt Roosevelt, Democrat. Again, biographer Richard Norton Smith.
There had been a very unpleasant, to put it mildly, encounter between the outgoing president and the incoming president at the White House. FDR came to the White House to pay the ritual visit upon the outgoing president. It did not go well at all, and it set the tone for inauguration morning itself. Hoover, at one point, about midnight that night, he just threw up his hands. He said, "We've done everything we can. There's nothing more." And it was in that frame of mind that he climbed into a car for a very, very long and very chilly ride down Pennsylvania Avenue. There was virtually no conversation between the two men. Roosevelt, at one point, was reduced to making inane comments about the lovely steel in a construction site that they passed. Ironically, one of the public works projects that Hoover had initiated trying to fight the Depression. Mm-hmm. It was a glum day for everyone except the new president.
Interesting life. Out of office, he became chairman of the Boys Clubs of America, but it really wasn't until 1946 that he got back into any meaningful kind of public service, and it was when Harry Truman asked him to run the Famine Emergency Commission. Is it because blood was so bad between him and FDR that he was really out of public life?
That's true. It's ironic because the two men had once been friends. In fact, in 1920, FDR told a friend he wished they could make Herbert Hoover president as a Democrat. Huh. Well, they did have a terrible falling out, of course, in 1932, and to the degree that Hoover was scapegoated, he was a wonderful political foil for Democrats for years, but you can imagine what it did to the relationship. Years later, Justice William O. Douglas asked Hoover how he had managed to survive those long years of ostracism, and he said, "It's simple, I outlived the bastards." Longevity is always the best revenge.
Herbert Hoover lived for another three decades after he left the White House. Hoover died in 1964 at the age of 90, which means he outlived quite a few of them. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News, Washington.